Hey everyone. The Three Body Problem is the name of a centuries-old math puzzle and a brand new Netflix show. And guess which one has the top search result? It's always nice to see math get cucked. Imagine Googling Pythagorean theorem and seeing six pages of Tumblr dream castings. It's a great prank on math. The book is by Liu Cixin, who loves math.
And this is The Book File, a podcast about the best of books and the worst of books. If this is your first time to the podcast, welcome, and may we suggest checking out our back catalog of over 173 episodes with just as many books.
Is it just 174?
I think so, yeah. I'm Kellen Erskine. I'm a comic, a father, a husband, and I had no idea what this book was about before getting into it. I just assumed it was an essay on why thruples don't work out.
And I'm David Vance. My PR folks are telling me I need to get ahead of a scandal here, so I deeply regret comments I made that might seem derogatory toward math and its beautiful culture. No one is less anti-math than me. Some of my best friends are squares, and people always say my jokes are derivative. I request privacy as I take time to learn and move on from this incident.
Okay. Dave and I are not equal when it comes to bad jokes.
Kellen is often quite mean.
Team Harry Miney says, Dave Vance and Calvin Earthshine, that's a great callback, are the best podcast hosts I've heard. Dave's charismatic personality makes you feel funny and intelligent at the same time. Keller Deerskin tells good jokes. Definitely recommend this podcast to anyone who likes or hates books. Oh, it's nice.
So I am obsessed with these books. These are my favorite sci-fi series. And when I read them, I couldn't stop thinking about them. And I've just been rereading them continuously since then. But Kellen, what did you think?
I loved it too. And even more so after I read the second book in the trilogy, The Dark Forest, which has my favorite ending of any book I've ever read. At least it's a top four ending, along with To Kill a Mockingbird, Project Hail Mary, and Green Eggs and Ham. Speaking of which, I think you'll love this novel if you read Project Hail Mary and thought, that was too fun. I am more confident broadly recommending that one because I think even if you're not really into science, everyone still likes to laugh. Mm-hmm. The Three Body Problem, as much as I love it, it is harder to recommend it to everyone because it's only meant for smart people.
Oh, yeah, that's how I should pitch it. Because I've pitched it to a few people who just don't like it, and I should have made it a test. I should have been like, you seem smart enough to really get this, but let me know if you're not.
It's a great way to trick people into reading. I homeschool my kids. No, but this is, it's a slow build of big, interesting ideas, and it took me to places visually that I've never been to in a book. So I really enjoyed it. I take it back. There is a pretty funny part in The Three Body Problem when a man gets a countdown doomsday clock burned into his retinas. But other than that, it's not really that slapsticky. I do think sometimes it's helpful to know what else someone is into, like as a gauge for recommending books. So I would say you might enjoy this book if you also like Children of Time or Gardens of the Sun for more realistic sci-fi, or if you were okay with how slow Dune was. And that's only a half joke. I enjoyed Dune as well. So if today's very intelligent book that also reflects your own intelligence sounds interesting to you, consider buying it using the link in our episode description. That way you get a book and you get to support the podcast.
And you can use the same link to buy glasses and a curvy pipe.
And those gold binoculars on a stick for the opera. Anyway, if you want to get a book and support the podcast, it's available in paperback, hardback, Kindle, or for free on Audible if you're a first-time subscriber. Again, just click that link. Also, big spoiler alert here. If you're planning on reading The Three Body Problem or watching the series that's out on Netflix, do that first before this, because it's very difficult to talk about this book without revealing the biggest plot points.
Also, to whom it may concern, if you're like me, you can use ClearPlay to filter for content. A couple of episodes of Three Body on Netflix have pretty graphic scenes, and we don't have a deal with ClearPlay or anything. It's just a useful tool for me and my wife that we sometimes use to choose our viewing experience. And to be clear, Dave doesn't care. In fact, when there's violence in a movie, that's when he uses his opera binoculars.
Speaking of spoilers, those start now. And you've been warned, so here we go. I'm glad that I didn't look closely when I ordered this book on Amazon, because when I went back to it recently, Amazon, just on the page of the book, it casually says on the seller's page that this book had hit, quote, number one in alien invasion science fiction ebook.
The biggest twist.
Yeah, it's like the alien part, it's a surprise like halfway through the book at least.
Yeah.
Imagine if the Fight Club novel was promoted as being number one in both guys are just the same guy the whole time subgenre. All right, without further ado, these are three lessons that we took from The Three-Body Problem. I didn't realize that it worked out that way. One lesson for each body. All right, lesson one. Make me think stuff I've never thought before. Please. I think I'm just going to say please after each lesson to compel our listeners to take me seriously out of pity.
Yeah, nothing gets respect more than begging for it.
I've stayed married 15 years. So some of the most interesting big ideas that the author explores are, one, what would it be like to live on a planet pulled in sporadic orbit by three different suns? Two, what might a real invasion be like from our closest star system? And I love that one of the answers being that it would likely take hundreds of years for them to get here. Which brings us to number three, what might happen to our world culturally, knowing that we will be attacked by aliens, but not for a very long time? It's an idea that I had just never considered before, because any sci-fi film that you see, it's like they detect it, I don't know, an hour before it happens. And this is like, we find out centuries.
You have 2 centuries. Yeah. Well, the first inaccuracy there is that everyone agrees and believes the threat is real.
Well,
and let me tell you.
I do like that he paints the more complex scenarios that humanity, as like we do in a crisis, instead of all banding exactly together, like in Independence Day, I think each of us like to join a different team. And I know that he didn't mean to use COVID as a metaphor, but feel free to think that he did clairvoyantly, because this book was published in 2006. But here are some of the events that he comes up with. The world's governments have a hard time agreeing on one strategy. Some groups of people form who want to help the aliens as allies. Some groups form against the aliens. And some people just hate the world so much that they say, let them come. We deserve it.
Oh, man. In the lead up to an alien invasion, Twitter would be so annoying.
And referencing what you said earlier, you're right that like the one group he leaves out is that people that just don't believe that any of this is real.
It's like, brother, there are people we are still convincing this planet is round. They will never believe that a star 4 light years away. Actually, no, they might believe that one. They probably believe that now.
Aren't all flat earthers prepare for an alien invasion? They're probably like, oh, I hope they try and hit us from the bottom. So I don't know which group that I would belong to, but I think it would be the one of, hey, I haven't been watching the news, so can someone just let me know if it's okay to go to Target yet?
Yeah, I'd be the one who immediately buys all the toilet paper.
You got to collect it now. I heard that these Martians have 3 butts.
I think I'd immediately invest in all the stocks people buy when they're afraid. So before I start this lesson, Kellen, if you found out today that you were a wizard, how hard would you work to develop your powers?
Oh, yeah. I'd be practicing on strangers at the park right now.
I feel exactly the same. And yet, almost every American can learn a system of secret arcane laws that let you fly through the sky and send messages across the seas and extend life beyond what the gods intended and wrest control of matter and the very elements. So what are we doing wrong that so many of us don't give a We can do literal magic and somehow we made Hogwarts boring. That brings me to lesson two. These books are great because they show the magic in science. Mm. Some examples of telling science versus showing. I could tell you how small a proton is using numbers. Or this book can show you, if someone made a machine the size of a proton, here's how it could ruin your life. The bizarre illusions and spells it could cast, or the way it could lock human science in a cage. Another one, Kellen, I could tell you how a computer works. I mean, I couldn't, but... Or this book can show you a computer made of millions of humans quickly sending signals with Boolean logic in this giant emergent intelligence. You just feel like the magic and the spell casting of science. Mm-hmm. Now, is it all accurate? No. But it for sure makes you care about science. It's like an opposite Neil deGrasse Tyson. Kellen, do you remember when Neil deGrasse Tyson said BB-8 would be impossible to roll on sand? And Star Wars responded, that's an actual robot. It really ruined the gimmick that is his entire personality. So I love this quote from a New Yorker interview that Liu Cixin did. It says, on the cusp of his teens, reading a book on astronomy, Liu had an epiphany about the concept of a light year, the terrifying distance and bone-chilling vastness it implied. Concepts that seemed abstract to others took on for him concrete forms. They were like things he could touch, inducing a drug-like euphoria. Compared with ordinary literature, he came to feel, the stories of science are far more magnificent, grand, involved, profound, thrilling, strange, terrifying, mysterious, and even emotional. Mm-hmm. But Kellen, don't you think he should still have to joylessly memorize the definition of ribosome? His writing makes me feel all those things. And I think science is good for the human ego because most days my ego wakes up and puts on a polo shirt and loafers and is like, why, good morning. I'm an important man in a normal world. But then sometimes science skitters up to me on scuttling legs in a trench coat like a creepy magician and says, bleh, you're a tiny speck in the most bananas universe possible. And ego's like, ah, alas, I should be humble.
I do wonder, and you're bringing all this up, I think maybe it's okay if we keep science boring in high school just to weed out the people who might use it dangerously for their own gain. Like maybe the guys who egged my house sophomore year, maybe they don't need access to a particle accelerator.
Anyway, I do think there has to be a way for us to make science not only more fun for kids, but also more fun for adults. It almost feels like how music and sports are so fun until an adult makes you do them for hours. Yeah.
All right, lesson three, show me things I've never seen. So I recently experienced this with the newest Dune movie. I love that with Hans Zimmer's music and sound design, I hear sounds I've never heard before. Like, he literally hires people who invent new instruments that are made out of like plastic pipes and ostrich eggs.
For real?
Yeah, it's all real. And I think it'll become the next piano. And paired, all of that paired with the vision of the director of Denis Villeneuve, along with his cinematographer, of showing us things we've never seen before, like a planet with a black sun, or a sandworm used for transportation, or a movie that still won't finish the story of one book for another 5 years. So here's just a quick list of my favorite images from The Three-Body Problem. And I think that one of the things that makes them more compelling to me is that he grounds each one of them in science. And I think that something feels that much more compelling, that much more real when we're given the sense that this could actually happen. I think that's why the hoverboard in Back to the Future 2 was such a big deal, because it seems sort of plausible, right? To the point where there were conspiracies, like that they actually made made one real hoverboard, and it was owned by Michael. It was owned by Michael Jackson. Yeah, that's a story that circulated at the time. Which, by the way, if you owned one, wouldn't you just show it off every day if it was actually real?
It would become like the Elder Wand, where everyone keeps killing each other for it.
Especially something as cool as a hoverboard, you wouldn't be like, I have one, I just keep it turned off.
No, yeah. It would for sure pass from person to person like the ring after a seal door didn't destroy it.
I mean, that's how Michael Jackson acquired it. He strangled his brother after his brother found it on the bottom of a pond. So if you've read The Three-Body Problem, you'll recognize some of these. Some of the, to me, are very original visuals in The Three-Body Problem include a pyramid disassembling and floating into the sky, people who can dehydrate themselves out of necessity. I'm jealous. The night sky blinking on and off. A planet torn in two with an outer space lava river flowing between the pieces. As Dave mentioned, a computer made completely out of people. To be exact, a 22-mile square of people. That's 36 kilometers for our Canadian friends. Really for our friends in every other country.
Every reasonable country.
There are so many more, but my last one is a cargo ship getting cut to pieces by a net made of nanowires thinner than a human hair. By the way, when they were setting that up, don't you think they needed to be extra careful? Like, I've pegged down the sides of a tent with ropes and then tripped over those ropes
immediately.
with a nanowire, you get zero chances. It would just be like, well, now my foot is gone.
Yeah, I've never pitched a tent without being like, okay, how far can I make the rope be from the fire?
But I love that some of these images are like planetary in scale and some of them are just person to person. And to me, a visual doesn't have to have scale to be compelling. It just has to be original. Dave, I don't know if this is going to work, but I wanted to just to illustrate this point more, that how new an idea is can contribute the most to its appeal or how it's celebrated. Can you tell me roughly how many spirals there are in Van Gogh's Starry Night painting?
Oh, okay. I'm just going to try to picture it. I'm going to guess 72.
There are two.
What?
Yeah. You can look it up right now. And that's what I did this experiment on myself, and I thought that there were at least 20.
You tricked me.
How?
You deceived me.
How?
You made me a fool.
No, I did this on myself. And I hope that everyone else had an answer of at least 10, 20, 30, 40, because in my mind, that's what this was.
I refuse to learn a lesson. I refuse to learn a lesson. I see only an affront.
I thought of this one day because we have, I actually have the Starry Night original that I found at an IKEA for $27. And that's...
That's a steal.
Yeah, it's great. It's huge, too. I've thought about bringing it to Antique Roadshow, but it was the only one there. That's why I'm assuming that it was an original.
Yeah, it had lost its color, so you did have to paint the numbers. Well, Kellen, I have a test for you. Without looking at the Mona Lisa, and the answer will surprise you, how many eyeballs are on the painting?
Okay.
Wouldn't you love to go back and it's just covered in eyeballs?
How have I been so wrong? Her enigmatic smile, which shows through the dozens and dozens.
Please, I am begging a fan, please email us at thebookpawpodcast@gmail.com a photoshopped image of the Mona Lisa with 100 eyeballs.
The point of this is that I just tried this thought experiment out on myself one day, not even knowing what it would apply to, but just trying to think how close I could get. And then going to look at, again, my original painting of Starry Night and seeing that there are only two. And it hit me so hard then that this, like, possibly next to the Mona Lisa, the most famous painting in history, and it's I think it's because it's so unique. It's not just the clouds, but like the sky itself that swirls. And it's just two. It's mm-hmm. like a big one and a medium-sized one. So my theory is it was because it is so original, so novel, it becomes so memorable. And this is always a goal of mine when I'm writing jokes. Don't tell anyone. Whether it's a new image, like I have a new joke that I like where a person and a cat are sharing a prison visitation, like on each side of that glass with the telephone.
That's really fun.
A hand on one side and a paw on the other. Whether it's like a new image or a new helpful idea, like putting a bike lock on the doors of a Baskin Robbins. I think there's value in presenting new interesting things to the mind of the viewer or reader, or as I call my fans, connoisseurs of high art. So my takeaway is, in a nutshell, I wouldn't have minded if Dune 2 was an hour longer. I was just hoping they would finish the story. It's a really good story. I wasn't prepared to take it in thirds.
All right, random facts. A friend of a friend is a flat earther, and she'll post about her open-minded beliefs, and it murders me that her smartphone is pinging satellites moving through space at Mach 20. It's powered by transistors that make bacteria look like a skyscraper and uses the theory of relativity to help track her location across the Earth. And she uses that science to post stuff dumber than a 5th century peasant. It's like the people who only get to think Stalin was great because they live in a democracy.
I love this passage in the book. As soon as Wang left the research center building, the nightmare-like feeling caught up to him. He felt like the starry sky was a magnifying glass that covered the world, and he was a tiny insect below the lens with nowhere to hide.
Wow. Really makes you regret some childhood choices.
I wonder if he looked up at the starry sky and was like, I could have sworn there were 72 swirls up there.
You misheard me. What I said was 7 to 2 swirls. It was a range. So, Kellen, a thing that cracks me up is that, you know, every corporation is trying to maximize profit, right? And to do that, they need to seem woke, but like vaguely woke. So woke with no policy demands or things that will make people mad. And most importantly, they need to never criticize the Chinese government. And so it cracks me up that Netflix just released this show and the very first scene is like, so the Cultural Revolution really sucked, huh? You ever see a company do something and just immediately know they're not selling in China?
So when the author was coming up with this human computer, this computer made of millions of people that spread in a 36-kilometer square.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
I'm sure he must have come up with some rough calculations for those dimensions. And I bet while he was trying to figure it out, he was like, if only I had a computer made of people. I also thought it would be neat if they had a laptop made out of just like 10 people.
And someone on that planet is like, you know, this is how powerful the computer was that Reagan had. Aren't you grateful?
So here's just a couple of pros and cons of owning a computer made of people. Pros, never have to charge it. You just have to feed it 1 million pounds of food every day. It can dust itself.
Oh, yeah.
It forces you to not stay up working too late because parts of it start falling asleep.
You don't have to pay it.
Cons. More susceptible to viruses.
Oh.
And it gets real crowded when you take it to the Genius Bar.
Wait, can I ask you something, Kellen?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
If you have to picture 10,000 people, what do you imagine to get close to that? Is there like a reference image you use for yourself?
I guess the way that I imagine like 50,000 people is I imagine a sports stadium.
Okay, yeah, I thought that would be a common one. Mine is, I just picture the army of Uruk-hai marching on Helm's Deep. I'm like, okay, that's about 10,000. About 10,000 strong. Now, I don't know what that looks like if they're not all mega jacked with long flowing orc hair. They have wonderful hair. This episode may have as many Lord of the Rings references as 3 body references.
Here's another quote that I like, but the way he writes it is also a little silly. But I do love this image. So this planet that ostensibly has this computer made of millions of people, it essentially starts losing its gravity to another force. And the book says, quote, Wang glanced at the human formation computer and saw a nightmarish sight. The 30 million men who had formed the motherboard were floating away from the Earth and rising like a swarm of ants sucked up by a vacuum cleaner.
Oh, man.
Also, for the TV show's special effects, I hope they actually just used ants and a vacuum cleaner. Like, it's this beautiful, like, CGI when everything starts and then just cut to... And my last one, this has nothing to do with the book. I just came up with this idea when I was thinking about the hoverboard. Don't you think that we could break TV viewership records if they just held one debate between Trump and Biden? And there wouldn't even be any speaking. It would just be a contest that each of them enthusiastically agrees on to prove to the American public how cool they are. And the contest is that each of them has to see how long they could last on a skateboard.
Oh, man. I would love to watch that because they'd for sure break hips and be hospitalized and I'd get better options.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, the only outcome of that is that Kamala Harris becomes president that night.
Being vice president is as close as a human gets to Schrodinger's cat because you have no real power at all, unless...
Unless a guy with three names solves that paradox.
I just read that next Robert Caro book about LBJ. Mm-hmm. LBJ was hated and dismissed and embarrassed by JFK's staffers. And then one day...
Whoa.
All right, to recap, our favorite lessons from the three-body problem. One, make me think things I've never thought before, please. Two, these books are great because they show the magic in science. Three, show me things I've never seen.
And four, I actually solved the three-body problem. The answer is 15 and a half. It's why I wear extremely huge sweatpants.